growing up, especially as a young woman starting out in a career that's heavily, you know, male, you can often be told like, you're too emotional, you need to dial that back, or, you know, separate personal from professional. But I actually think that as I've gotten older, I've really started to recognize that as more of a superpower and one that lets me do my job really well.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. We help people to navigate the future of work, to work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. Few professionals demonstrate the case for workplace empathy better than this week's guest, Hannah Jo. Hannah is an empathy-building brand strategist for Scotts Miracle-Gro, the nation's leading garden care company. Empathy is central to how Hannah does her job and drives value for consumers who rely on Scotts Miracle-Gro products to grow flowering plants, but also food from seed. Nearly 21 million people embraced gardening during the pandemic, and Hannah used her marketing skill to make the new brand experience for them rewarding. She also describes her unusually positive maternity leave experience. We discover that Hannah hadn't worked at the company long enough to qualify for paid maternity leave, and yet her management created a workaround that allowed her and her prematurely delivered baby to recover well. And that workaround allowed her to return to her full-time work, energized and happy. We cover a lot of ground in this episode, including the lessons she learned as a young female executive and later as a mom in the workplace. Clearly, Hannah's workplace experience is a model for the future of work. I spoke with Hannah Jo in June 2021 over Zoom. Hannah Jo, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
You are welcome, my friend. So you manage brand strategy for Scotts Miracle-Gro, and I'm wondering if you'd be so kind as to describe the company and the work that you do for them.
Sure. So Scotts Miracle-Gro is a consumer packaged goods company that is in the lawn and garden category. So all sorts of lawn care products, gardening products, really helping, you know, families get outside. And I'm also really proud to say we do a lot of good in the world too. There are a lot of big goals we have in terms of sustainability and getting kids outside gardening and helping pollinators. It's a really fun place to work, especially because I'm a gardener. So I'm very into it and I'm addicted to all of the products that we sell. And as far as brand strategy goes, so I'm actually touching right now all of our different brands. Scotts Miracle-Gro is a big umbrella. It's a lot of different brands that we house and serve. And so I'm making sure that all of those brands are really thinking about who we're serving in terms of our audiences. How do people behave? How do they shop? What's going on in the world that can influence those purchasing decisions? What are all of those different sort of factors and influences? And just helping make sure that when we're selling stuff, we remember that we're actually selling it to real humans. So that's a big part of what I do every day.
So you provided me the perfect segue, because one of the things that I noticed in your profile was the word empathy.
Yeah.
And you sort of attached that to brand strategists. So what's an empathetic brand strategist do that maybe one that doesn't have that attribute?
I'm hoping that all brand strategists are empathetic, but unfortunately, just in our world, that's not always the case. But I really see it as our job to be the voice of the customer. And you can't do that unless you can imagine life through their eyes. and ask questions like, how's this person feeling? What's going on in their mind? What happened during their day that might have influenced what they're doing? What's going on in the world right now that's influencing, you know, their mindset? And I've always been an empath. I think that's how most people would describe me. I have very big feelings. Mm. I feel all of my feelings very deeply and very intensely. And I've been lucky enough just in my life to meet a lot of other people like that. Because I think growing up, especially as a young woman starting out in a career that's heavily, you know, male, you can often be told like, you're too emotional, you need to dial that back, or, you know, separate personal from professional. But I actually think that as I've gotten older, I've really started to recognize that as more of a superpower and one that lets me do my job really well, trying to harness kind of that big emotional energy into really understanding people better, which makes me really good at my job. At least I hope so.
So you're drawing a lot of consumer insights, a lot of different ways. I would imagine a lot of a one-on-one engagement with customers, probably less so with focus groups, but more in real engagement where you can get to talk to consumers and what their lives are about and how they apply your products to make their lives better. Is that sort of the case?
Yeah, actually, there's a lot of different methods that we employ. One thing that's cool about Scott's Miracle-Gro is that I'm part of the consumer insights and research team. So we've got a whole team. My boss is an incredible market researcher. She's brilliant. So we talk to people, you know, one-on-one, in focus groups, in stores, at shelf. We can talk to them when they're in their backyard working on their garden. We also have our own sort of panel of folks that we recruited that we talk to a lot and can kind of just ask questions and have them email us and have them do all sorts of fun things like diaries or, you know, draw us a picture or, you know, any sorts of thing. You know, it's unlimited, but we get to talk to a lot of people. We also do a ton of quantitative research, tons of surveys go out all of the time, lots of national studies. So it's both quant and qual, which is really exciting. So we have tons of data to draw from, which is great.
I would imagine with the pandemic that gardening has been a major escape for people, especially those who have been remote working every day.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's truly unprecedented, I think is probably the most overused word of the year, but it's super appropriate for the lawn and gardening category. We saw over 21 million new lawn and garden folks enter the category this year. So of course, we hope to retain all of those folks. We hope they keep gardening, keep enjoying being outside. I know it's a little bit different now that we're, you know, the vaccine is out, we're starting to get back to normal, but gardening and just being outside and working on your yard is like such a magical, stress relieving activity. So I'm hoping that it kind of helps everybody stay balanced as we start to kind of move into the new normal, whatever that looks like.
And I would have to imagine that with the price of food spiking right now, your customers who are growing food from seed are doing it for both economic, but also intrinsic reasons. Would you agree?
Definitely. Yeah, 100% agree. I mean, and the price of so many consumer goods is up. Lumber, you know, people who are building raised beds, you know, all of that stuff is more expensive now. You know, it's interesting thinking about how the category is doing compared to last year. It's still booming, but I think the fact that everything's gotten a little bit more expensive has taken its toll as well. So yeah, I'm sure a lot of people are starting from seed. I actually did a lot from seed this year, which was new for me. So far I've had success, fingers crossed. We'll see how it goes.
You know, it's really funny. I lived in a planned community and they did not allow vegetable gardens.
Whoa, really?
And I was so angry that I said, okay, fine, I won't grow vegetables, but I'm going to tear up half my front lawn and plant perennials because they're really pretty. And the birds and the bees and the monarch butterflies like
them. Yeah.
And they had a hard time with me, but the neighbors loved it. And it was like a gathering point for people.
Yeah, that makes me sad that they had such a hard time with it because it's so, I mean, it's good for everybody. It's good for every living thing, human or not. And the bee population, I'm sure, certainly was grateful for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to ask you about your experience as a mom, and in particular, the timing of taking the job that you have now when you were expecting a child. And I imagine that had to be a little nerve-inducing, stress-inducing for you. What was that like? And when you did deliver your second child, what happened that really surprised you about Scott's and the management team that you work with?
Yeah, so it was definitely scary kind of finding out that I was pregnant while I was searching for a new job. And I wish I could say that, you know, it's not scary at all and who cares and it doesn't even matter. But the truth is that there's still a ton of bias out there. And it's just not something that I think a lot of women would feel comfortable just telling potential employers right off the bat. So, you know, normally I probably would have posted on social media, told a ton of my friends, and instead it was kind of lonely. I kept my pregnancy, I was pretty quiet about it compared to how I was with my first pregnancy, which was, you know, a little lonely and a little scary. But I really wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to scare off any potential employers. You know, I started contracting with Scott's Miracle-Gro while I was pregnant. Didn't say anything about it, but just the team that I was working with, which is the team that I'm on now, was just so incredibly awesome. I could tell it was going to be fine. And my boss is actually a mom, and she's incredible. Which, so it's also great to work with somebody in that position and know that they're understanding and, you know, provide that flexibility. So when she offered me the job, it just like spilled out of my mouth right away. I was like, great, I accept. And also there's something you should know. And her reaction was just, that's great. I'm so excited for you. You know, it was, there was no hesitation. I was so nervous about it. And she just took all of that stress right away. And she was so happy and so excited for me. And I was also nervous because as a new employee there, you don't qualify for FMLA
right
until you're there a year.
For those who don't know what that stands for, can you tell us?
That's the Family Medical Leave Act, which basically says that in the United States, if you're an employer who has 50 or more employees and your employee has worked there a year, then you qualify for up to 12 weeks of unpaid family-related medical leave. So that could be a pregnancy, that could be maybe you just have depression and you need to take a leave of absence or, you know, some other kind of medical related absence situation. I know it came into play with COVID as well this year. And basically it protects your job. That's the main thing about it, is that they can't replace you while you're gone if you take FMLA. So I didn't qualify for it because I hadn't been there a year. And that was honestly one of my biggest concerns with the pandemic for so many women is so many women got displaced. So many parents got displaced, and you may be starting a new job during this period and you don't qualify for FMLA. That's a whole lot of people. So very nerve-wracking, but luckily they basically had a system in place for that. They said, you know, you don't qualify for FMLA, but we're just going to call it administrative leave. It's basically going to give you the same thing. So it was 10 weeks fully paid. And then I tacked on 2 weeks of vacation. So I ended up with 12 weeks fully paid, and it was phenomenal.
So that this happens, but you also delivered early. You had a preemie.
Yes, I had a preemie. So I was due the last day of February, and I unexpectedly went into labor December 13th.
Oh, wow.
And had my baby December 15th. And everyone at work was so kind, so understanding, so supportive, just incredible. And I actually ended up splitting my maternity leave. So I took a couple weeks off right when the baby was born. And then while he was in the NICU, I worked most of that time, actually, either from home or from the hospital. And then once he came home in March, I took the rest of my leave, which was, I think at that point, I had about 9 weeks left. So I just returned to work actually mid-May.
Now, are you back in the building? Or are you hybridized?
We're still remote.
We're
still remote. There's a little bit of hybrid going on. They're opening the building up slowly in terms of like collaborative space, hot desks. Like if there's an important meeting, but they don't want people just like parking at the building and working there all day yet. Right. They're actually doing it incredibly thoughtfully. They're really sort of slowly taking this on and seeing how everybody feels. And they did a whole survey. There was a whole committee. So yeah, I'm still from home, which has been really great in terms of transitioning back from maternity leave.
So with your experience, you're working remotely now, and I guess you're going to have a wait and see attitude as to how you're going to progress. You know, a lot of people, not just women, are thinking about workplace, and probably half of all active members of the workforce now want some flexibility in the workday. My generation, I used to commute like multiple hours a day. I would eat up, you know, wonderful time of the day, usually leaving the house before 6 a.m. to get to the office, which wrecked me.
Yeah, that's rough.
And I'm happy that your generation is going to have this flexibility. But now it brings up an interesting subject, which is how gendered the COVID experience has been in the workplace or in the workforce. Women have taken it hard because they're moms, because they're caregivers. And there is this new thing called vicinity bias. I don't know if you've heard this term.
No, I haven't.
So what does that mean? It means that there's a premium in a lot of companies to return to the office because that was the old normal and that's what the C-suite wants and it brings everything back to control, right?
Right.
Well, here's the problem with that. Not everybody can do that.
Yeah.
And women in particular may not be able to do it for the reasons I just mentioned. They're moms, they have kids in daycare, and maybe they are caring for other people. Given your experience, how do you relate to all this? And what lessons do you think we should take from your own experience? Because it seems to have worked for you.
Yeah, I mean, I totally relate. I have read so many of those New York Times articles that have come out talking about the pandemic's effect on women and women in the workplace, especially, and all of that, and the mental load that we take on and all of those things. And I will say, I have to give a shout out to parents of all genders, because I give a shout out to all humans during this pandemic, because we've all suffered. So that's true. I don't think parents are alone in that. But when the pandemic first started, my kid was pulled out of daycare, my toddler. And so I was trying to have client calls and she would sit on my lap and type on my keyboard and be mad that I wasn't paying attention to her. And I needed to do interviews and, you know, formal conversations. And it did affect me negatively at work and how I was seen and how I was perceived, because I was like, listen, like my husband is a veterinarian. He's not at home. Other people were working from home with another parent so they could kind of take turns with the kid who was home, and I couldn't do that. And there were certain things I couldn't do, and it did affect me negatively. It's really, really hard. But at the end of the day, like I've seen from places like Scott's Miracle-Gro, and I know so many other employers across the country, that if you really value the people that work for you, if you really value what they bring to the table, then you support that whole person, not just who they are at work. And that means the fact that they have kids, or it might mean that they have a chronic illness, or it might mean, you know, something else. We all have things that put boundaries on our lives. And I think America is a little bit of a different country than other in terms of how we prioritize work and how we prioritize our day. I have a lot of friends who live in Europe, and they're just like in a state of disbelief about how we prioritize our day and our values. You know, I think it just shows, like, if you value people, then you recognize that, hey, I'm a smart person. I enjoy my job. I want to be here. I do a great job, but there are boundaries that I have to set in order to live my life in a productive way. And the companies that recognize that are going to get a return on their investment ultimately. I mean, data shows that, like, people are more productive when you give them paid maternity and paternity leave, when you give them a normal amount of vacation days, when you let them reset, when you let them have space in their schedule. So, I mean, even if all they were concerned about was money, the data shows that they'll make it back.
One of the interesting things that I'm facing as a podcaster and as a former headhunter is to see how we're going to change how we relate to work. And you mentioned your friends in Europe. Now, I've met enough Europeans on vacation. The one thing you don't ask a European is, what do you do for a living, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
That's offensive.
Yeah.
You talk about family, you talk about what life is like for you and your worldly experience, but you never talk about work. It's considered rude. But we ugly Americans, we often define ourselves based on what we do. I'm hoping with the pandemic being a trigger, it starts to change, and that I'm seeing this movement towards work as part of the day and not the entire day, the way it used to suck up my life, you know, 80 hours a week working in the ad space, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, so many of my friends and I talk about like that feeling you have when you're at work and you feel like you just have to sit at your desk, even though like you're really done for the day or you're at a great stopping point and there's another thing you wish you could go do. And just that feeling of like, well, if I left, what would everyone think of me? Even though I've done my job, like I don't need to be here, but I need to be here. And I think COVID has kind of shown like, you don't actually need to be there. Like the world will go on. It's okay. People are productive. You know, our brains don't work in these 8-hour chunks. Like that's not how humans operate. So it's like the system that's been built for us doesn't actually have anything to do with how human productivity actually happens, right?
So you're back to work and it seems to me you're proving the point about ROI. You're engaged.
I hope so. Yeah.
Fired up.
I'm pumped. Yeah. I'm energized. It's summer, which for a company like Scott's is like, that's our season, you know? So there's a lot of really exciting stuff going on. I feel like I came back at sort of just the right time to kind of be part of this new season of all of the exciting things we're doing and exciting products we're launching. I needed the brain break. I mean, I had a kid in the NICU, I had medical complications, you know, I just needed a break. And I think getting to have that and kind of reset a little bit also made me more motivated, you know, coming back. And also like, you know, because Scott's is such a big company, I'm working with tons of people who are parents or who just got back from maternity leave or paternity leave or have new babies. And not that I want to like talk about my personal life all the time at work, but it is nice to be able to relate to your coworkers and not feel like you're the only one. And it's been good. It's been really supportive.
I know from my own pre-recruiting days in advertising, that was really hard for women. They didn't talk about anything beyond work.
Yeah.
That had to be really hard for the people in my generation to accept because the men all talked about what they did.
Yeah. I mean, the agency that I was at before I went to Scott's, I would say, you know, skewed pretty young. And I started there really green right out of college. And I didn't think about parents at all. And, you know, I was there doing the grind with all of my other 25-year-old friends who, you know, we were there till 11 p.m. and we went to happy hours all the time and we did all of that stuff. And then like all of a sudden you move into parenthood and you're like, did other people do this? And I just never knew. Like it's like, it just never even, you know, crosses your mind. And I remember there wasn't even a parental leave policy there until one of the female partners had a baby while I was there.
It took that.
Yeah. And it took that. And, you know, she wrote the policy. And then, you know, when I actually had my first child there, while I was on maternity leave, she like got a nursing room set up for me. Like she, like it had like cute wallpaper and like a very comfortable chair. And like, you know, it takes another woman who's gone through it to be like, why don't we have this? We need to have this. Let's do it. And it's sad that that's what it takes, but that's what it takes sometimes, you know, especially in our industry, I think, which is so fast moving and so like deadline driven and who cares about, you know, what's going on in people's lives, just, you know, grind it out.
Right.
So yeah, it's definitely different. I think being on the client side this time around.
All right. So let me ask you a question. I've placed a lot of people in your space over my career, and I would say close to half of them, if not half, were women. Many of them moms, although that never came up usually because in my day, it was about the job spec and how well does that person match up to the job spec? And it would be like, you know, 15 must-haves or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never was one of the must-haves being a mom. Right. I'm going to ask you a question. To all the moms out there and the wonderful experience that management experience that motherhood or parenthood is, should mother be on a resume? I mean, how do you feel about that?
Yeah. I mean, and you actually sent me an article about this, which
it was in LinkedIn.
Sparked
it was,
my curiosity about it. Yeah.
It was in LinkedIn. And I was like, huh.
So this is totally my personal opinion, but I kind of feel like there's a right way to sort of approach this and kind of a wrong way to approach it. I think for me and what would be successful for me, I don't think I would ever feel comfortable like putting mom on my resume as a job that I've done. You know, it's a personal choice.
Right.
And I don't consider it to be a professional job. I think it's as much work as a professional job. But I do appreciate some separation. However, I do think that if you are a parent who was staying at home and now you're re-entering, you know, the workforce and you've got a gap in your resume,
you got to account for the time.
Right. I think it makes total sense to put that you were a stay-at-home parent during that time. That's what you were doing. And, you know, that makes total sense to me. It also makes total sense to me when you're like talking about your skills and your management experience and all of the things that parenthood helps with in terms of your skill set, communication and prioritization and being deadline driven and all of that stuff. I think being a parent is a great talk track to go along with that.
Especially if you've got a kid who's sick,
right?
Chronically ill,
right.
Or there's some crisis going on in the family.
I challenge anyone to find a better CEO than a parent. Nonetheless, a parent with a kid with a chronic illness or some other extenuating circumstance like you're talking about. I mean, negotiation skills, detail orientation, like skills out the wazoo, you name it. But I don't necessarily think that like mom as a full-time job just on my resume feels right.
Hannah Jo, this has been really fun. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Before we depart, I'm wondering if you could point our listeners to some of your social media so they can read up on some of the things that you are thinking about.
Sure. Yeah. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Hannah Jo. I work at Scott's Miracle-Gro, so it should hopefully be pretty easy to find. And then my Instagram handle is at HMaggidJo. Maggid is my maiden name. That's M-A-G-I-D. So HMaggidJo on Instagram. And yeah, I would love to chat with anybody who found this interesting and happy to chat plants, being a mom, just crazy stuff out in the world, very into pop culture. So if anybody listening is into that, happy to chat about that too.
Well, I wish you the greatest success and I wish your family well and your adorable children good health and a wonderful life ahead.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Links to Hannah Jo's social media are included in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Meantime, if you haven't done so, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you get them, or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. And please take a moment to positively rate and comment wherever you listen to this podcast, because that helps us to connect with new listeners. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. Thank you for joining us on an amazing journey to the future of work doing meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.